We're happy to see everybody here for our last class of the day. We have some new ones, I think, today. If you need, if you weren't here yesterday and need an outline, can you raise your hand and we'll raise your hand and Rick will get it to you. If you weren't here yesterday, give them priority first. That's all we have. Yeah, thank you, Matt. Matt has offered to make us more copies, so while he's doing that, let's turn our Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 12, and we'll talk about the incident that divided the kingdom of Israel into two different nations. All right, 1 Kings chapter 12. Thank you. 1 Kings chapter 12. You can see on your outlines that this is where the kingdom divides after the reign of Saul, after the reign of David, and the reign of Solomon. When we read yesterday in 1 Samuel chapter 8, does everyone remember what Samuel warned the children of Israel would happen if they had a king? Remember how he told them that that king that they chose would take their sons and daughters and make them work for him. And that king would take their produce. He would take their crops, their livestock. He would tax them, in other words. And even after explaining all of this to the children of Israel, they said, that's what we want. We want a king. We want a king. So now we're seeing some of the fruits of what Samuel had warned them about. He told them how it would be, and sure enough, it came to pass. Okay, do you have them now, Rick? Raise your hand if you still need a copy of our outline. Yeah. Can we have someone under the age of 25 read verses 1 through 20? Okay, William. Lowell, William's offering right here. I'll wait for everyone to be sure to get their outline. And yes, 12, 1 through 20.
Egypt. So they sent for Jeroboam, and he had the whole assembly of Israel. He and the whole assembly of Israel went to Rehoboam and said to him, "Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." Rehoboam answered, "Go away for 3 days and then come back to me." So the people went away. Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. "How would you advise me to answer these people?" he asked. They replied, "If today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants." But Rehoboam rejected the advice the elders gave him, and consulted the young men who had grown up with him and were serving him. He asked them, "What is your advice? How should we answer these people who say to me, 'Lighten the yoke your father has put on us'?" The young men who had grown up with him replied, "Tell these people who have said to you, 'Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter.' Tell them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions.'" 3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to Rehoboam, as the king had said, "Come back to me in 3 days." The king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. He followed the advice of the young men and said, "My father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for this turn of events was from the Lord to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah the Shilonite. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, "What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, O Israel. Look after your own house, O David." So the Israelites went home. But as for the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them. King Rehoboam sent out Adoniram, who was in charge of forced labor, but all Israel stoned him to death. King Rehoboam, however, managed to get into his chariot and escape to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. When all the Israelites heard that Jeroboam had returned, they sent and called him to the assembly and made him king over all Israel. Only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the house of David.
Okay, thank you, William. Have you ever heard of unresponsive government? A government that is out of touch with the people? This is a very damaging accusation when it is made against government. Why, they don't even know what it's like for us little guys. Why, they've lost touch with the working man. Well, this is nothing new, is it? This is seen back here in the splitting of the kingdom. Rehoboam was one of Solomon's sons. Ironic that Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes about what will the man do that comes after the king? What about the man who lays up great treasures and has all this wealth? Who knows what kind of a son he's going to leave it to? How tragic to see what happened when Solomon left his kingdom to his son. A very sad story we've seen here. Rehoboam has an opportunity here when the people are all gathered at Shechem to do good to his people. He has opportunity to prove that he's a good leader. He has the opportunity to do what is right in the sight of God. But instead, he follows bad advice and does what is wrong for the people. He's got two kinds of advice he could follow. He can follow, according to verse 6, the advice of the elderly men who had benefited from the experience of Solomon, his father. Certainly would have been qualified to know good options in a situation like this. But rather than listening to their advice, he listened to the young men that grew up with him, his own peers. Does this teach us something about our peers? It doesn't teach us that our peers are bad, but it teaches us that it's dangerous to rely upon our own peers for wisdom in very important matters. Many times we, especially when we are young, we don't have the experience. We don't have the wisdom to make the right decision. Rehoboam listened to both pieces of advice. The older men advised him in verse 7 to be a servant. Serve the people. Now, a worldly man finds it hard to look at leading from that kind of perspective. They'd rather look at it from Scar's perspective. You all remember Scar? Some of you older ones may not remember Scar, but the bad guy in The Lion King. See, being king means I can do what I want. That's what being king means. That's a worldly perspective. But we never learned that from God. We never learned it from Christ. And there were good kings who learned that lesson, that to be a good leader is to be a servant. Jesus taught us in the 20th chapter of Matthew that the one who would be greatest among you and chief among you will be the servant of all. So these older men were very wise in saying, be a servant to them. They are chafing under this terrible yoke that your father put on them. They've taxed the people. Your father taxed the people to get all of these things. Somebody had to pay for these things. It was the people who paid. Lighten their load. They're not being unreasonable when they ask for lighter work and lighter taxes. They're not being spoiled. They're not being unreasonable at all. Listen to them. Serve them. And look what you will get. They will be your servants forever. They will be your servants forever. Some of you have read about Alexander the Great. And those of you that haven't read about him know that the fact that he's called Alexander the Great must have meant there was something great about him. How could Alexander the Great take over the world? He understood what it meant to be a servant. He understood this. And when he would come to countries, he would do things that showed he was willing to serve, willing to help, willing to bend a little bit. Unfortunately, many times that meant bowing down to their idols. But it didn't matter to Alexander. He didn't care. But Alexander understood that to gain people's dedication, you have to serve them. Poor Rehoboam didn't learn that. And so the advice of his peers sounded better. Doesn't it sound better to say, no, you got to get tough on these people. You got to get hard on them. You've got to draw the line and make them shape up. I'm your king. We're not going to start off this way with you calling the shots. That sounds wise when you don't have any experience. I'm going to get strict. Going to get rough. I'm going to skin some hides. No, that's not the way to win the service of the people. Could you imagine being an Israelite and listening to Jeroboam speak to you, your new king, when you're hoping for a positive reply to your request? We've asked if you will lighten the taxes in our workload. Oh, I hope he will give maybe a little bit. I mean, even maybe he might even make them remain the same. No more new taxes. Something like that. But imagine how they felt when not only did he not listen to them, he said, I'm going to be harder than my father was. I'm going to make my father's burden look light compared to mine. Did he really expect people to respond to that? Sometimes a person can. And so it's no wonder that the children of Israel said, the 10 tribes then, verse 16. What portion have we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, David. So Israel departed to their tents. It's almost like, are we living on a different planet? Where is this man from? Can he not hear us? What a sad mistake Rehoboam made. Wasn't his father one of the wisest men who ever lived? See how careful we ought to be, how concerned we ought to be with being wise and passing wisdom on to our children. Rehoboam listened to the counsel of his own peers, and he failed to take advantage of the wisdom of experience. How do you look at life? Those of you that are young, how do you look at life? Do you look at life as, well, I'll earn my own way. I'll figure it out myself. Is that how you look at it? I always remember one of John Lee is often quoted. I remember one time John Lee quoted from someone. He quoted, I think it was from Mad Magazine. He said, learn from other people's mistakes because you won't have time enough to make all of them yourself. And there is a great deal of wisdom in that. Learn from other people's mistakes. Learn from other people's mistakes. Don't let pride cause you to think, I'll figure it out myself. No, I can figure this one out myself. Rehoboam would not listen to the voice of experience, and what a great price was paid. Does anyone have any comments on listening to the voice of experience? Anything to add from our experienced members or from those with less experience? Okay. All right. Now, we talked about this so that we will all be clear in our mind what divided the kingdoms. Before this time, there was friction between Judah and the rest of the tribes of Israel. It's not difficult to understand why there would be friction. Remember, David was of the tribe of Judah, and that caused a lot of jealousy. What's so great about the tribe of Judah? Aren't we also of Israel? Well, Judah was where God found the man after his own heart. And even before this time, when the 12 tribes were still in Egypt, before they had multiplied and become a great nation, it was prophesied that the scepter would not depart from Judah. Genesis 49, verse 10. So this was God's will. He knew this would happen. And there had been friction up until this time, and now it exploded. Jeroboam, and as we've said before, we don't intend to talk a lot about the kings of Israel. We would rather talk more about the kings of Judah, but from time to time we will mention them. But we do want to say this about the kings of Israel, that Jeroboam, their first king, had the opportunity to do what was right. God never put any barrier or obstacle in his way. He never kept the door closed for Jeroboam. Jeroboam had the opportunity to make Israel a great nation. Could have been just as good or better than Judah had they been inclined that direction. You can take for a reference on that chapter 11 when Ahijah the prophet is speaking to Jeroboam about this very thing. Verse 38. It shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and wilt walk in my ways, and do that is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did. That I will be with thee and build thee a sure house as I built for David and will give Israel unto thee. Notice who the standard is here, the example. As David my servant. When we study the kings, brethren, these names will keep coming up. You'll either get compared to David or you'll get compared to Jeroboam. And those are the two choices. David represents following God fully. Jeroboam represents following idols from the start. There's our contrast among the kings. Are we like David or are we like Jeroboam? And this is a personal lesson we can learn from this. As we compare ourselves to these kings, we ought to ask, who am I more like? Am I more like David, a man after God's own heart? Or am I more like Jeroboam, a man who gave the people what they wanted, set up idols, gave the people those things that would make them look like other nations? This is the conflict we're involved in today. We should not be surprised if we feel pulled in two directions. The Lord will allow us to be tested in this way. But as we study, these will be the names that will keep coming up, and we will notice this frequently, how the description will be given of their hearts and how they follow God, how much they follow Him, how closely they follow Him. In looking over these kings, let's comment for a moment on idol worship, because idol worship, as we see, will be a problem again and again for the children of Israel. It will be mentioned time and time again when describing the kings and the situation of their kingdom. The idolatry, of course, when Noah and his family came off the ark, none of them were idol worshipers. So somewhere between today and Noah, idolatry had its beginning. Romans chapter 1 describes the beginnings of idolatry. We won't turn there, but I think most of us have been to that chapter different times. Romans chapter 1, beginning with about verse 18 through the end of the chapter, describes how men begin with the knowledge of God. Don't ever believe these worldly explanations about cavemen and men developing over millions of years and finally inventing God in their own mind. The only inventing that was done was the inventing of gods with a small g. That's the only imaginations that took place, was when men came up with their idols. No, the true God has been revealed from the start, and men have a choice of retaining God in their knowledge or letting Him slip and replacing Him with an idol that we create of our own. Whether that idol is in the heart or whether that idol is outside of us, it's something that will take the place that God was intended to fill. God created us so that He might fill us. But when we follow idols, God can no longer fill us. God loses His rightful place. As we think of the kings of Israel then, do you recall that King Saul ever had any trouble with idolatry? Does anyone like to comment on Saul and idolatry? Okay, Lowell?
Self before God.
All right, very good. Self before God. That's a good explanation. Take the reference in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 22 through 23. After Saul disobeyed God, and that's the way God looked at it, it was disobedience, to go and not utterly destroy all the Amalekites, but save the king and save the best of the cattle. That was disobedience. And Samuel told Saul that it is better to hearken to God. It's better to listen to Him than to offer Him the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and to disobedience is as the sin of idolatry. In other words, to rebel, to be stubborn, these things are as bad as witchcraft and idolatry. Saul had this within him. Whether he ever got involved with any of the idols of the other nations, I don't remember if we ever have an indication. But this put Saul over here, right with the sins of Jeroboam. Although he kept it to himself, yet it affected the nation. It was not pleasing to God for Saul to put himself before God. So there was a form of idol worship even in the life of Saul. And that's why God looked for a man after his own heart. He's interested in the heart. Where are your affections? Are your affections with God, or are they still here in the things of the world? The kings were judged by where their heart was, by what they thought of, by what they loved, by where their directions were aimed. Were you following Jeroboam's path of idol worship, or were you following David's path of being pleasing to God? If that's how God judged them, it should be no surprise that God will still look at us in the same way. Okay, Jim has a comment.
We do a lot of things in religion according to what seems to be practical, what looks like it will work. And you couldn't say that Saul or David were unreasonable in numbering people. After all, if you're a king, you want to know how many fighting men you have. You say that's purely natural. But God wanted a complete faith. If you only have a handful, you'll win if I'm with you. So his viewpoint is totally different from man's in many ways. And we have to remember that since God doesn't think as we think, that we take his thinking over our own.
A very good comment, Jim. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned David. Marvin has one too, Lowell, or Mark. We need to remember that David numbering the people is a good example. It's what a humbling thing that even Joab knew better than to do it. Even somebody that we don't consider a spiritually minded man knew there was something wrong in what David was doing. Yes, so even David slipped. We need to have a perfect heart with the Lord. Marvin?
How do you consider the consultation with the witch of Endor?
A very good point. Towards the end of Saul's life, he consulted with the witch of Endor. And yes, that certainly would have been a type of idolatry. Remember, witchcraft and idolatry are right there in the list of the works of the flesh. And people go to witches because they're looking for a higher power. Same reason people went to idols. They felt like idols would give them some kind of power or advantage. They would give them some type of help. And that makes God jealous. Because God provides us all the help we need. Everything we need is in the Lord. And there will be kings who get in trouble because they go this way. They go this way for help. And as the question was asked, is it because there's not a king in Israel that you had to consult with an idol? Is that why you had to consult? Is this an indication that there's no God in Israel? Is that how far you've put God away from you, that you now have to consult idols? And we're seeing it in our country today. That's why we see on television advertisements for the psychic hotlines. That's why we see the zodiac tables. All of these things, even though they have the disclaimers on them that they're for entertainment only, they're there because people trust them. People look to them for advice and guidance. The unstable, those that don't have God in their lives, or those who have rejected God, look for something here as a guide for their life. The Lord is our shepherd. We shall not want. We don't need idols. We don't need witchcraft. But so many of the kings didn't believe that, and they walked in the ways of Jeroboam. Thank you, Marvin, for reminding us of his witchcraft. That's good. Steve has a comment.
In 2 Chronicles chapter 11, the end of verse 12 makes mention of the Benjamites, or the tribe of Benjamin, also being with Rehoboam. So we get our 10 and our up to for 12.
Oh, thank you.
But then in the 13th verse, it says the priests and the Levites also went with Rehoboam. They stayed with the Lord's anointed, in other words, and made a spiritual decision, not one with their pocketbooks, and stayed with him. And as we mentioned yesterday from Judges 18, Jeroboam already had a false priesthood to build upon there in Laish, which became known as Dan, and he did set up his shrines in Dan and in Bethel, and drew upon that priesthood that had started already back in the time of the judges. So he just went with those practicalities there and formed his own false religion.
Thank you very much, Steve. Take that as a reference, 2 Chronicles 11, 1 and 2, where it describes that it isn't simply the tribe of Judah only. There is also the tribe of Benjamin and the priests and the Levites who cast their lot, so to speak, with the kingdom of Judah. Very good point. Do you think that this may be one of the reasons that David is so outstanding, is because of his relationship with idolatry? In other words, we often think of David's sin, his adultery, numbering the people. We do remember those sad moments in his life when he let the Lord down. But why then can the Bible still speak of him favorably? And maybe this is a part of the reason for it, is that he never was like this. He never did this and followed this way. He rather kept his heart with the Lord. And when he did sin, he did respond in a favorable way. He did not react in a way that made things even worse when it was pointed out to him. He humbled himself. He asked for forgiveness. David's heart, David's inward condition, I believe is what makes him so outstanding. And he never did, even though he had several wives, not as many as his son, but he had several wives, he never apparently compromised with them on any religious thing, at least in regarding to idolatry. This may be one of the things that makes him stand out so much. And this study, of course, is not about David, because we study about David a lot, and we wanted to take time to concentrate on some of the other kings. But we won't be able to talk about the other kings without the name of David coming up. So it's good to remember that there's a thread here, we might say, a thread that runs from David down through all the good kings. God is not ashamed to compare the good kings with his servant David. He's very pleased with David. David's way of serving the Lord. David loved the Lord. And the sin of Jeroboam, unfortunately, as soon as Jeroboam becomes the king, well, of course, Solomon, as described in 1 Kings chapter 11, because he loved many wives, he did some very detestable things in the name of idolatry. Brought in idol worship. And you see, if the leader brings it in, what a precedent that sets. If the president does it, if the king does it, it's like it validates it. It must be all right if the leader does it. Whereas if only some of the people, some of the common people do it, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody approves of it. But when the leader does it, it's different. So Solomon is the one to bring in these things that lead to the downfall. They cause the downfall. God makes a promise to David about the throne, but because of the idolatry of his son, he has to take away most of that kingdom. He leaves him a part of it for the sake of the promise. But do you see, once again, I'm reminded of the statement by the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter, the 4th chapter, about the righteous scarcely being saved. The righteous are scarcely saved. They're saved with difficulty. I wish we could read the history and see that David and the tribe of Judah and all of Israel were all faithful to the Lord. I mean, that still would have been a minority of people in the world. Still would have been a small part of the world. But no, even in God's own nation, there was still just a remnant who remained faithful to the Lord. So Solomon's idolatry is what brought the downfall to his kingdom. Going back then to 1 Kings chapter 12, when Jeroboam down in verse 26 of 1 Kings 12, Jeroboam said in his heart, here's how Jeroboam thought. He says, now the kingdom will return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again to their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. And what's the solution here? It isn't God's way, is it? Whereupon the king took counsel, made two calves of gold, and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Now, where have we heard that before? Yeah, Aaron said that too, didn't he? Here's your gods. Isn't it nice to be able to see your gods? What kind of gods are they if we can see them? What kind of gods are they if we can make them? Incredible. But how easily it was followed. Richard.
I see here the motive of Satan. Okay, Satan said, you shall not surely die. God has said that you will, but I'm saying you will not. Actually, what he should have said, these are the idols that you brought up from the land of Egypt.
That's good. That's good. That's very good, Richard. These are the gods which you brought up out of the land. That's amazing. How clever and how easily it was swallowed. What a foolish thing to say. What an untrue thing to say. And how easily it was bought. Yeah, I guess that'll be all right. Sure. Well, it is pretty convenient. It is too much to go up to Jerusalem. You know, up here in the mountains, it's a long trip to go down there. I kind of like these two convenient locations that we have now. There's one near you. Steve?
Let's remember also that when Aaron made that statement, there was only one calf idol. In Jeroboam's case, there's two in the northern and southern parts of his kingdom. But when Aaron said, these are your gods, he was referring to Jehovah God and this thing that's before you. And putting the two together, which is another part of the definition of idolatry, ascribing to God what is not God's.
Mm-hmm. Very good. God has never been pleased with idolatry, and especially when it has been there's an attempt to mix idolatry with the worship of God. And when we study the kings, we find out that this was frequently done. It was done even in Judah. That idolatry was mixed right in with the worship of God. It was right in the temple. God told them what to put in the tabernacle. He told them the way it was to be designed, build it according to the pattern. They added idols. And whenever there was reform, those idols had to be taken out. Get them out of here. This is not God's plan. This is not how you worship God. God's told us how to worship Him. So that's a good point. These are your gods, O Israel. How do you represent God? And people today have paintings of Jesus on their wall, and they pray to those paintings. They view that painting as a representation of Jesus Christ. Again, there is nothing in the Bible that would indicate we need to see a picture of Jesus. Nothing to indicate that that is going to help our worship in any way. Worship in spirit and in truth is not assisted by images that we make with our own hands. God asks us to worship Him with the things He made. fruit of our lips, coming from a heart that is making melody to the Lord. So Jeroboam is very clever here, and he knows how to break any loyalty that people might feel to Jerusalem, although he's not completely able to do that. There are those who still will retain an allegiance to Israel, to Jerusalem, that is. But for the most part, unfortunately, it is spoken of as all of them going that direction. Very, very sad thing that has happened here. Right away, you see, the promise that we read back in chapter 11, verse 38, is if you'll be obedient, I will establish you. I will build you a sure house as I built for David. Isn't that a wonderful promise? Jeroboam had the promise. He gave it up for idols. As Jim said, a practical solution. I know what works. I know what works. Do you ever hear that in religion? If you've ever talked to anyone about religion, it comes up. Well, this doesn't seem to be working. What, working what? What are you trying to work at? What are you trying to get done? We need to do something that works. Well, that all depends upon what you're trying to do. Jeroboam was trying to find something that worked. He found something that worked. It kept people from going back to God. It was very effective. So the whether it works or not is not the criteria. The criteria is, what did God ask us to do? Are we doing what the Lord asked? If we're not doing what the Lord asked, then let's do what He asks us to do. Then we will be working. God will be pleased. Do you have any comments on Jeroboam, his tactics, the splitting of the kingdom? Anything further to add to this? Lowell?
In preparation for one of the lessons, we kind of altered a little bit, so it's that's not really important. But I asked an elder from a liberal Church of Christ if they had the office of evangelist, and he said, no. He said they did in the early church, but as times change, needs change, so they didn't really need evangelists anymore. That's kind of the same principle. It maybe worked then, but it doesn't work now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point, Mom. A lot of churches are just very casual about doing that kind of thing. Just give it up and do something. Their primary concern is attracting people. And that's basically Jeroboam's concern. He's got the most people and he wants to keep them. And he comes up with a way that he was able to keep most of the people. Couldn't keep them all, but he kept most of them. There's another thread here in idolatry before we close this lesson today. Here's a thread I want you to notice. We've talked about this a lot in the other classes, but it just keeps coming up. You can't get away from it if you study your Bible. It's like the brother said one time, if you want to believe that false idea, then don't read your Bible. Because if you read your Bible, you can't believe that false idea. And if you don't think marriage is important, if you don't think who you get married to matters that much, well, it's going to keep coming up. In the case of the kings of Judah, if you go down on your list to Jehoram, you've got Rehoboam, Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, and Jehoram. Jehoram is a king that was not very good, even though his father was. His grandfather as well. What happened to Jehoram, the Bible says, is that he married one of Ahab's daughters. One of Jezebel's daughters? What kind of a woman would that be? Imagine she'd be pretty exciting. She'd probably be really thrilling. She'd keep you on your toes. But she influenced Jehoram to become a very bad king. His son Ahaziah had her for his mother. And then Ahaziah was succeeded by his mother, Athaliah. Athaliah was a very, very wicked woman. And just as you won't hear of very many girls being named Jezebel, you won't hear of too many girls being named Athaliah either. See, the women in their lives, the women have great influence, just as the women still have great influence today. Be sure you get with a woman who'll be a good influence on your life, not be an Athaliah or Jezebel. Any comments on the kings and who they married? Okay. Well, we appreciate your attention today.